All right, back on the record on the Arborwood appeal on November 19, 2024, 3:10 p.m. Just finished a 10-minute break. We are with cross of Mr. Lubischer's rebuttal testimony by Ms. Koski. All right, Ms. Koski, go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Lubischer, I just am asking you one question, and I will try to be more clear with how I'm asking it. And to clarify, when I'm talking about the fill, I'm talking about fill in the buffers within Arborwood. And here is my question. Is it sufficient that these issues you're talking about, your concerns with hydrology in the surface area flow up by the road, getting down to the wetlands or wherever it is on the road, getting to the wetlands, okay? Are those concerns addressed through what has been discussed at this hearing and what is already a part of the CABR, which is these can be addressed through future stormwater design plans. The Ms. Decker's change to her recommendation on the 5 to 15% fine content and the mitigation, monitoring, and contingency plans that are required of this project.
Okay, I think I understand better now. Ms. Koski, I apologize for the interrupting your cross. That was okay. Unfortunate. Okay, on the 5 to 15%, I started off saying, I don't think that's realistic. I don't know where you're gonna get that kind of dirt. Everything that's been characterized on the site so far has been silty to very silty. That aside, I don't think that that's going to mimic the existing conditions. And especially, you know, we went into the nature of the existing upper soil horizons as being a product of, you know, hundreds of years of weathering and scores of years of bioturbation by plants and animals, and, by freeze-thaw weathering. You don't get that by just doing a 5 to 15% silt. And of course, this is compacted too, okay, which is not the case. So I would disagree that that would actually be effective. There is also the aspect of depth, okay? The more fill you put in, the less water is gonna get through.
That's okay. That's okay, right. Mr. Lubischer, the fact that you've said that you disagree that that's sufficient, and I think that answers my question. Okay. So I have no further questions.
Okay.
Well, you had two other questions, right? You had one about the stormwater design and one
I think by saying that you don't think it's going to be possible to mimic based on the fight, I think that that answers my question, that you don't think that it's going to be possible to mimic with the conditions that we're proposing. So that answers my question. I don't need you to go any further.
Okay. Yeah. And Mr. Telch, you can bring that back up under redirect if he finds that necessary. Sorry, Mr. Getchess, any questions?
Just a few. Let's see. Okay, can you see my screen?
Yes. Yes, sir.
All right, this is A85. Do you recognize this? It's titled Swales. It's one of your exhibits. Did you create this?
I did.
And you drew the arrows on there?
I did.
And the arrows are meant to show us the direction that water is flowing from uphill east, downhill west to wetland P2.
Yeah, the arrows go in hand with the catchment boundaries. So the catchment boundaries, both the catchment boundaries and the arrows are done perpendicular to the contour lines, right? And the boundaries are basically the ridges to either side.
Right. And so the question was just the arrows are meant to show the flow of water, correct? From east,
the general trend
uphill,
of surface
west,
the general trend of surface flow, runoff, interflow. Yes.
Okay. And I did just want to ask you, do you know what impact, if any, the existing roads in this area have on the flow of water? Or did you just kind of guess or assume?
Okay. So you see the vertical red line on the far right?
The crest line?
The crest line. Okay, so that's the ridge line. Water goes east and west from that point. So do you also see at the top of the page where it says Hill Bend Lane?
Yep, right there.
So you follow Hill Bend Lane down to just past the 180 point?
Yep.
Okay, so roughly speaking, that part of Hill Bend Lane is on a ridge. So it's kind of...
So you don't have any arrows to the going west from that point. All the ones to the right of that point go east, right? I understand
right.
that.
Right, correct. So that part of Hill Bend Lane that you were talking about really is not in the picture, in the big picture.
No, I understand. I understand that. And I haven't gotten to the question. Go ahead.
Well, I thought you were focusing on the dog leg in Hill Bend.
Well, there is this one arrow that shows water flowing past that. You can barely see the dog bend, but this right here. I didn't want to spend too much time on this. I was just kind of getting at whether you thought about the roads when you drew this, or you just, they were an oversight because they're not, a lot of these roads aren't even there. And how we should view this. Do you still think that these arrows accurately depict the flow of water past roads? And if so, is it because you're assuming that the roads were designed in a way that allows that? Or do you not even know whether the roads
so
do or not?
So we're talking about two different scales here, Mr. Getches. I'm doing a, shall we say, a big picture look at where water moves and where the catchment for P2 is. Now, on a finer scale, which includes, finer bumps in the topography itself, but it doesn't take into account the houses and the driveways and such. And we know that those are impervious surfaces that are going to run off water. We know that there are culverts on the road.
Well, do we? That was one of my questions. Do you actually know whether these arrows accurately show the flow of water? Or are you assuming that these roads have that because that's how roads are typically designed, to allow water to get by them?
So a big part of this area west of the east of the property line and below the ridge line, it's all, steep lawn, very open. So we're only talking about the part near the top where people have, for the most part, where people have built houses and driveways. And no, these arrows don't take that fine detail into account. And I addressed that earlier today when I said that even if you have a driveway that is blocking flow, say a driveway that goes north-south, that water still got to go somewhere. And it's going to run down a ditch. It's going to run down a gully. It'll infiltrate. Something's going to happen to it, but it's going to stay within the catchment. Okay. There aren't any features here that collect water and put it on the other side of the ridge. Does that help?
I mean, there were roads. I'm not going to go back to the satellite image. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but there were roads right here. And you've got arrows showing water flowing right by there. And I'm thinking that must mean that he either doesn't know the roads are there, or he doesn't really believe those roads are acting like dams because of the way that they were designed. But does he actually even know? Or is he just assuming they don't act like dams and nevertheless calling them dams?
The difference in the damming is also one of scale, right? That if you've got 100 feet of driveway up high in the catchment, that's not the same as putting a dam all the way across the catchment from one side to the other. Okay. So any
sure,
given
no,
arrow
I
there.
I understand that, and there were a few that were just driveways coming off of Hill Bend here going to houses, but then there were actual roads here and here, if you recall. Anyway,
well, they're all impervious surfaces. Some culverts. So no, this drawing does not have that tiny level of detail that would show the redirection of water due to a blocking road with a culvert under, nor does it show the finer scale of how water moves if we had 0.1 foot contours.
Let's go on to the next exhibit.
Sure.
This is A16. Do you remember this, looking at this one at length? This A16, this is the stormwater or the road design, the original spine road design that was discussed at the last hearing. You recall that? And we talked about this a lot during the last hearing.
Is this the storm drainage plan?
Well, it shows the spine road. It shows the gabion here.
I think this is a storm drainage plan.
Yeah. Well, it's it's A16, page 3 of A16, PDF page 443.
The title block could tell us. Isn't there a title block on the far right?
Yeah, over right. I think it's being blocked by this.
Oh, sorry. Just scroll down a little bit.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I'm with you now.
All right. Well, all I wanted to discuss on this one is you objected to, you asked Examiner Marshall to reverse and remand in part. You had many appeal issues, but one of them was based on stormwater design. Is that right?
Are you talking about the first appeal?
Right.
Well, it certainly came up in the course of the hearing.
Well, that was one of the reasons why you were asking her to reverse the decision or remand the decision, was because of stormwater. You remember?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Dr. Rosine made calculations that indicated that the gabion discharge would erode the wetland.
And the road was too close, and this was a design that, from your point of view, you would agree, I would imagine, that this was, that the ones that you've seen that are more recent than this are better than this. The road here is right in the buffer, not just a little bit of fill, but the road's in the buffer. It's been moved to the east. Gabion moved up, but you are still asking for reversal or remand based in part on stormwater. Is that right? Even though,
well, yeah, because we don't know what
Marshall,
these, yeah,
go ahead,
okay,
go ahead.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, so let's go and take a look.
So wait a minute. One comment I'd made is that the road is still in the buffer. Every design
a little bit of the fill.
No,
a
no,
little
no,
bit of the
no,
fill
no, 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 no. The regulatory buffer is 200 feet, and the road
sure.
is still
No, I understand
in the
that,
buffer.
But the agreed, you can.
I'd object, could Mr. Gashes. Could you just mind letting him finish the sentence? It's been going for a while. You're interrupting him every time he speaks.
Go ahead. It's still in the buffer because you think of the buffer as 200 feet, right?
That is the regulatory buffer for P2, yes.
Right. Okay, let's go into a different exhibit. Let's go into that needs to be closed. I got to here. Well, let's start with 7.2. And I believe, I don't know. Do you want me to read this real quick, or do you want to read it? Can you, oh, let me share the screen.
Okay.
Back to here. And just so we can remember, there were a lot of rulings in that lengthy previous decision, and I was just talking about one of them, so let's look at that one. There's more than one place in this decision that talks about stormwater, but here's one of them. I don't know if you recall this. Do you want me to read it, or do you want to read it?
Well, you could highlight which part you're interested in talking about.
Pretty much the whole thing, except for maybe, I don't know, the last sentence or so.
Appellant concerns.
Appellant's concerns that designs of the spine road and stormwater infrastructure would divert extensive amounts of water as compared, meaning acting like a dam, as compared to the undeveloped conditions. Let me finish, Mr. Lubisher. I'm only partway through.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Would divert extensive amounts of water as compared to the undeveloped conditions prompt erosion near wetland P2 and degrade water quality because there appeared to be no consideration of best management practices or water quality control measures did not constitute a basis to reverse or remand the caber, particularly where the substantial evidence shows the road and stormwater management plans were reviewed at 60% completed stage, which is standard practice. So there was some criticism of some of the reasoning in Ms. Olson's declaration, and that's why I'm bringing this up, because you had requested to have it reversed for these reasons.
And that request was denied. I asked that question of Dr. Rosine. So if he's cross-examining Mr. Lubisher about questions I asked Dr. Rosine, I think this is beyond the scope of direct.
Well, the stormwater was still discussed on direct.
We've
been pretty relaxed in terms of the scope of cross anyway.
Oliver, Mr. Lubitscher has testified extensively about all the stormwater issues. So go ahead.
So I guess, I'm not making a big point, but I'm just pointing out, kind of giving some background as to what was the reasoning behind that Ms. Olson's declaration. And part of it was based on the previous examiner's decision and the fact that you had appealed it then. And that was a worse design. I think everyone can agree from a stormwater standpoint. The current design, you may not be satisfied with it, but wouldn't you agree it's less impactful than the design we were just looking at, where the road was, the actual road was less than 100 feet from wetland P2?
Okay. So you feel free to stop me if I get off away from your question, but the second appeal was based on a road fill design that was substantially the same as the first one. Yes, it was moved back a little bit. The effective buffer went from 50 feet to 85 feet.
Go ahead. Were you still going?
Well, yeah. Do you want to put that back up?
The other one?
Yeah.
All right. Just a second.
There we go. Yeah. And the point here that Examiner Marshall was making, I think this is in her findings, isn't it? The 465. The stormwater plans were reviewed at a 60% stage. So right now we don't have 60% drawings, right, for the caber to review. I mean, these new proposals have not met that standard.
Well, wouldn't you agree that what you have seen in terms of, like, we know for sure that that the road, let's look at this one, let's look at 784. This one we've looked at quite a bit during this hearing. Zoom out a bit. We at least know that the road is much further away now than it was during the last hearing, right?
Well, what I'm interested in is the toe of the fill, and that's moved 35 feet back to the east. So
that's an improvement.
That's an improvement, granted.
Yes, it is. well, let's see. Yeah, I guess that's all I wanted to point out was that it is that she denied the request to reverse based on stormwater before. Now, still, we don't have all the answers to the questions regarding stormwater that we would like to have, but I think everyone can agree that it's an improvement over what existed before. And I know you were wanting to be focusing on this one that shows that there is still a little bit of fill.
Well, if I may.
Go ahead.
I mean, I don't know if that was a question, but I have a response.
No, it wasn't done, though. See.
Okay.
And that she hadn't. So I was basically trying to defend the decision not to go into further depth on stormwater because it wasn't clear from the remand that that was being requested, and that what we do know is that the road is significantly further away from wetland P2 than it was before. And I do understand that you still object to this fill being in within the 100 feet, and that you also object to it only being 100 feet, being reduced to 100 feet instead of being the standard 200 feet. Is that right?
Partially. Both the initial design and the remand design still completely block the swale with compacted fill.
Well, that's been a discussion between the experts the past few days over whether that's correct or not. I mean, the engineers have attempted to design the road so that won't happen. And when you were explaining your drawing in labeled swales, you explained that you assume that oftentimes that doesn't happen, that you design a road and it doesn't result in an actual dam or a very effective dam, because the intent is that water will not dam up on one side and will make it from one side to the other, right?
That really wasn't my testimony. You're not talking about Hill Bend. You're talking about down here on the Spine Road, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Where you were saying that this totally blocks all the water coming from east to west. And then you're kind of vague about whether the ones on Hill Bend, where you didn't get down into that detail, and the way you explained it is, well, they're further away anyway. Well, this is further away than it was before. And
different scale.
They're doing what they can to design it so that the water can make it past the road and continue on to wetland P2. But I do understand that your experts disagree whether they've succeeded in that or whether, but they had some recommendations for how they would agree that it would work. And it sounded to me as though you didn't have any objections to those recommendations either.
Yeah. So Mr. Gekas, I'm giving you my professional opinion about this, right? And every design we've looked at makes a complete impediment for water getting from the upper 70% of the catchment down to P2. Okay. Even the most recent one, the B14, still has a complete cut through the interflow zone, and that's going to collect all the runoff and any seepage or interflow that is generated from the cut face. So the question is how to mitigate that and whether it meets the minimization requirement of the code.
Right. And it sounds like you're less optimistic that can happen, based partly on when I listened to your response to Ms. Koski's recent question of you, that you didn't think that there was sufficient soil or fill material on the site to meet the recommendations that, for example, Dr. Rosine was recommending. But
that's not quite accurate. No, that's not really accurate.
So where are you going to find 5 to 15% on the site? You have to be bringing in huge load. So no, I don't think that can happen. But correct me if I'm wrong. Do you actually think that the recommendations of your own experts are attainable?
Well, let's take a look at Dr. Rosine's recommendations, right? He wasn't totally keen on 5 to 15%. He mentioned he wouldn't go over 8, and he also said that he would require in situ testing to determine what the permeability actually was on the existing soils. And then the specification would be to match that, right? And to match that, you know, with whatever is required under the compaction strictures. Now, Ms. Decker made a certain set of sieve analysis based on samples in the P2 swale and found those soils to be 15 to 40% silt. We know that there's a lot of till on the site. Those are all high silt soils. We haven't found, you know, the recessional outwash is, might be a little bit cleaner. That's a, you know, fairly thin layer. And as you dig deeper, where you want to make bigger cuts, you're probably going to be into the, you know, the sandy silt and straight silt clay layers. So, you know, the first cut analysis is that in order to, if in, is that 5 to 15% is probably not going to be attainable with on-site soils.
Okay, so I'll take that as a no. You don't think that even if the applicant was willing to follow those recommendations, you don't think they'll be able to follow those recommendations?
Yeah, I think it's a fair question, Mr. Deschus. The other thing that I didn't really answer to Ms. Koski was about the stormwater design, and I think that was primarily about P2. And I will agree with Dr. Rosin that that seems like a, you know, a reasonable path forward. But, you know, there are some difficulties in doing that. It's a little bit atypical and it has to be done right. And DCD has not exhibited the kind of expertise that is available for reviewing and making sure it's going to work.
Yeah, they don't have in-house. They do have to rely fairly heavily on the applicant's experts, and every once in a while there will be a third-party expert, but they don't.
That may be the case.
They don't have much.
They do have the regulatory authority to engage additional expertise.
Right. No, I know. All right. No further questions.
Okay, Mr. Tulgin, any redirect?
Mr. Libisher, Ms. Koski asked you about your opinion of the 5 to 15% silt recommendation. And you began telling her about how that is related to the depth of fill.
Mm-hmm.
Can you finish your thought on that?
Sure. So for context, the fill in the L2 buffer at the far north and the fill at both creek crossings is 20 feet or more in thickness. And the thicker you make a layer, the harder it is to push water through it. So the greater impediment it is, the greater impact it has on site hydrology as far as infiltration and absorption goes.
So is that another way of saying that the same fill specification, you know, whatever it is, might be right in one location, but not necessarily right in another location?
Yeah. Yeah. There is that.
And did you see any analysis of that issue when they were discussing?
Nobody has looked at that subtlety of actually doing some calculations and modeling of how things would actually work.
Mm-hmm. That's my only question. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Lubisher, thank you again for taking the stand there and a good compelling final argument for you. All right. So Mr. Tulgin, I take it that is it for your presentation of evidence. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct, sir.
Okay. All right. You know, one thing I'm kind of thinking of here, and let me explain once I throw out that idea is, you know, I know the parties want written closing. So I was thinking kind of written closing and also kind of a parallel exchange of proposed mitigation measures if I were to go that route. In other words, you know, we'd say that applicant and county get their written closings in a couple of weeks, and then the appellant gets another week to submit their final closing. At the same time, we have the appellant present some proposed mitigation measures that are subject to a response and reply process. And like I said, to be honest, with the law, I have a pretty good idea of what I'm thinking about, you know, how the legal issues should be resolved, but the facts, I have no idea at this point. It's going to take me a lot of time to look them over. So I have no idea if I'm, you know, I have no inclination for remand at this point, as opposed to approval or denial or whatever. I don't know where the facts are going to take me on that. But what I want to avoid is if it gets me to the point where if facts get me to a remand, I want to avoid getting into this whole kind of whack-a-mole scenario again, where we have 60% plans and the appellants have sort of precise concerns that really relate to final plans, and the applicant, because it is 60% plan, has the flexibility essentially to say, oh, well, we do this or that, and then in the end we're not quite sure what they're going to do because we don't have the final design. It's not an ideal review process. If I do see a lot of shortcomings, and if those can be addressed by mitigation measures, then that puts us in a position where you get to the final design plans, and if it's not achieving what the mitigation measures were designed to achieve, then the appellants can appeal at that stage and have some final design plans to look at and argue about, and you have much more narrow issues to deal with. So that seems a little better, but I know from an appellate standpoint, there are strategic reasons to not, you know, it depends what your objectives here are, you know, whether to kill the project by constant appeals or whether you really, it's just the wetlands you care. You know, I don't know. That's obviously, that's all up to you. So, I mean, that's one potential there. I mean, Mr. Chelgen, it's like I say, that I think that's really up to the appellants if they wanted to present some proposed mitigation measures and have kind of a discussion. The other alternative is, you know, we don't have that parallel mitigation measure review, and then I come up with my final decision, and through reconsideration, you know, we fine tune whatever conditions I come with. So there is an alternative, but I kind of like the idea of dealing with the mitigation measures up front. It could be a total waste of time if I find, you know, that the applicants went on all the facts, but you know, it's more likely that even if I do find the applicant's facts more compelling, that there'll be some good ideas in the mitigation measures that I'll still add anyway. So I don't know, Mr. Telgen, what do you think? Like I said, I think that's mainly up to you if you wanted to go that route.
Well, I guess I was going to say, first of all, I'd like to do what would make your job easiest, okay? And get to a resolution. And I think, and I guess maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, but did I hear you say sort of appellants would upfront submit mitigation measures, mm-hmm. and then the applicant and county would present, I guess, sort of a response to that, a response brief with / mitigation measures, and then we would have a reply.
Right.
And so it would sort of be like an opening response reply, but our opening would basically be, here's the mitigation measures that are on the table.
Yeah.
I like that. I think that would be helpful for clarity for everybody, and I think it would give us something concrete to talk about.
I think it'd give me some ideas on how to resolve the case, and Ms. Koski, what about you?
So I have some concerns about using this proceeding to set stormwater plans that are not yet final and that will be part of the SDAP process and will be appealable at that time if they are not sufficient. And I am reluctant to use this process to do something it's not designed to do, which is basically set finalized stormwater plans. They're set at 60% of this process for a reason. That said, in this hearing, like, our stormwater consultants have said that there are things that they can do that they think would address the issues that have come up through this appeal. And we have said that we will do that. So I don't really know exactly what the right line is to draw there. Certainly, we are willing to agree to do the things that we've said we do, but we need finality on the CABR, and we also need the ability to have some flexibility when we get to that stage where we actually do finalize stormwater design plans to do what needs to be done to meet the conditions in the field. And that come up through other parts of this process that are not just related to buffer reduction.
Right. Yeah. Although, with the option for response and everything, then you can, that would be the point to say, this ties our hands too much. We need a little more flexibility on this issue. And so I think, I think this could help. I mean, I'd rather do it that way, like I said, than have to come up with them all on my own and then find out, you know, through reconsideration after the fact that, you know, for reasons I wasn't aware of this or that would not work. I mean, because what's something a little unusual about this process is the appellants have come up with several suggested designs and things that the applicants appear to kind of like. I mean, it kind of seems just almost from a common sense standpoint, you put a bunch of pipes under there that's going to be an effective way of getting the inner flow and the surface flows across that road, you know, and it'd be interesting to see, you know, a more refined idea of how that would be put together. So, yeah, what about the, like I said, it'd be a parallel process. We have, what about the timeframes there in the order? I was thinking 2 weeks and both applicant and county submit their closing arguments simultaneously. And then, appellants get a week more to spend, you know, because if we were doing it, obviously verbally, that would be kind of the order, except of course the county and applicant would act sequentially. But the main part is that the appellants would have final word on that.
Yes. Someone else speaking?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I would say my only concern is the timing. I think it's a fine idea. And of course, like you said, I don't think going this process at least ties Ms. Koski's hands on any argument she objecting to specific on whatever grounds. But I am more concerned about timing. You said, so I would get the conditions in 2 weeks for county and applicant, 1 week for me. My only concern is because the Meadowview SEPA appeal is coming up December 20th. And I don't like to complain about my schedule. I try not to, but I mean, that's going to be another full hearing coming up in pretty much exactly a month right now. So I just wonder where that's going to fall in that timeline.
And actually the 2 weeks in order was just for the briefing, not for the mitigation measures. That'd be a whole separate, like I said, kind of a parallel process, but same consideration, right? Yeah.
So that's what you meant by parallel. So there'd
right,
be
the mitigation,
the mitigation conditions going on one track, and
you'd have your conditions in 2 weeks. They'd get a, you know, 1 week to respond, and you have a few days to reply on the conditions. But the briefing would be 2 weeks for applicant county, and then a week after that, you, which would still be before Meadowdale, I believe. Except that we're kind of, you know, of course, running through the holidays here, so that'll probably complicate things a bit, but.
Yeah,
I guess I would say they had 2 weeks. I guess I would want to ask for 2 weeks too.
You'd have 3 weeks in a sense, but yeah, just 1 week to respond to them. I mean, if it's verbal, you would just have a few minutes to, you know, to respond. So that's why I was thinking that might be appropriate. But yeah, sorry, Ms. Koski, what was?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think a lot of our consultants are not available next week because of the holidays. We have a lot of people out of town. So to have maybe a 3 week schedule would be a little easier if we're going to try to put together, I'm sorry, I just want to make sure I'm following. So whatever the deadline is for when the closing briefs are due, at the same time those briefs are due, both parties would file their briefs at the same time. And then appellants would also file their proposals for stormwater changes. And then we would respond to those a week later.
That I haven't set a time frame for that. Like I said, I was going to do that kind of once we set it for the briefing, we can figure out for the mitigation measures. Yeah.
Okay.
Can I make a suggestion?
Yeah.
I guess, can I suggest maybe, because I also make just confused about how this will work. Would it be possible maybe for the examiner to send out a proposed schedule like we did with the pre-hearing order?
Where you say,
here's what you have, and then the parties just respond.
I'm confused.
It's already been kind of a long day. That's probably
good. Mitigations and conditions equivalent?
Hey, Joe?
Question mark.
Hey, Joe.
Yes, sir.
You weren't muted.
Oh, dear.
That's okay. You didn't say anything bad about me, so that's fine. Okay. So, all right. Let's resolve the rest of this by email. Also, what I'm going to do is probably this Friday, just go through the transcripts and make sure, you know, all the objections and things were resolved on the exhibits. And then I'll work with Ms. Jones to put together a final exhibit list and pass that out, make sure there's no misunderstandings about what's in the record and what's not. So by this Friday, we'll send out an email with a proposed schedule and hopefully I'll be pretty far on the exhibit issue as well. Is there anything else before we wrap it up today? All right. It's been a long haul. And also probably what I'll do is a lot of times I do it kind of verbally, but again, it's been a long day. So I kind of throw out all my understandings of what the lies and what the major issues are. So people kind of know what my understanding is and what I'm focusing on. And that can provide some guidance on the briefing as well. So I'll probably throw that in the email for good measure too. So,
thank you so much for that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay. So we are, I guess we're, it sounds like we're adjourned with the evidentiary portion of the hearing. At this point, it's just going to be briefing, no more new evidence, and except to resolve the exhibit issue. And other than that, I think we're done at least with the hard work, except for the writing. So anyway, thanks all for, this has been really well done and very interesting for me to hear it all. And people, I mean, the experts were all really excellent as well. And the attorneys, of course, too. So anyway, I'll be emailing you all soon. So have a great day. We're done for the day.
Thank you.